welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Spain morally rehabilitates Franco's queer victims, a lesbian mystery reveals more than clues, and Philadelphia has a new gay bartender. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Dean Elzinga.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending December 18th, 2004. Spain's parliament this week unanimously endorsed a resolution recognizing the persecution of gays and lesbians under dictator Generalissimo Francisco Franco. To extended applause, President of the Parliament, Martín Marín, read aloud the declaration extending the victims moral rehabilitation for all the suffering they endured. Franco took power in 1939, after a civil war that featured many murders of gay men. He ruled until his death in 1975 and incarcerated without trial as many as 5,000 gays and lesbians at two so-called sexual re-education camps. Some of those inmates were not released until 1979, when a general amnesty was declared. Lesbi-gay civil rights groups hope there will be financial compensation for those victims after a government commission completes its review of oppressions by the Franco regime.
What may be Italy's first legal protections from discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity were enacted last month by the Tuscany Regional Council. Those who violate the law can be fined up to 3,000 euros. Tuscany will also allow same-gender partners to make medical decisions for each other.
The most notorious employment discrimination in the U.S. is the ban on military service by open gays and lesbians, but it's facing new challenges this month. Two new federal lawsuits have been filed that challenge the ban, stimulated by last year's landmark U.S. Supreme Court ruling striking down state laws against private, non-commercial homosexual acts between consenting adults. One was filed this month by a dozen former service members who were discharged for their sexual orientation and are seeking reinstatement. They were organized by the Service Members Legal Defense Network, which is encouraged that the nation's current need for military personnel makes this a good time for the case to be heard. The other was filed in mid-October by the gay and lesbian political group Log Cabin Republicans on behalf of its members who are currently in military service. It claims the so-called Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy discriminates against gays and lesbians in violation of their constitutional rights to free speech, due process, and equal protection under the law.
A hopeful sign for all these plaintiffs is a ruling this month by the U.S. Army Court of Criminal Appeals in a heterosexual case. That court struck down the sodomy conviction of soldier Kenneth Bullock, who'd pleaded guilty to consensual oral sex with an adult female civilian. That's believed to be the first military court decision upholding a right to such acts in private. The military law Bullock was charged under, Article 125, has also been used against homosexual acts, as it prohibits unnatural carnal copulation with another person of the same or opposite sex or with an animal. This law has often been cited in support of the military's current anti-gay policy. The Army Appellate Court specifically referred to the U.S. Supreme Court's Lawrence decision and its recognition of a zone of privacy for consenting adults to engage in private sex acts without government interference.
Singapore is playing Scrooge this year, acting to prohibit a Christmas party organized by a subsidiary of a gay website, Agence France Presse reports. Friday.com subsidiary Jungle Media had applied to run an all-night party with major international corporate sponsorship on December 25th to be called Snowball 04. Similar parties had been held in 2002 and 2003. But last week, the government responded with a statement that police's assessment is that the event is likely to be organized as a gay party, which is contrary to public interest in general. Singapore is still, by and large, a conservative and traditional society. Hence, the police cannot approve any application for an event which goes against the moral values of a large majority of Singaporeans. This week, the Home Affairs Ministry rejected Jungle Media's appeal of the police ruling, saying the party would be an affront and unacceptable to the large majority of Singaporeans. The ministry appeared to be concerned about intimate behavior in public, even though the party was planned to be held in a nightclub.
Marawi City in the Philippines has gone even further, adopting an ordinance to force gay men and transgenders back into the closet. That's part of a package of 15 new ordinances that the city government describes as a cleaning and cleansing program for the only Islam-dominated city in the nation. Mayor Omar Solitario Ali told the Philippine Star that gays or badings must not go out in public in female dresses, colorful makeup, earrings, or other ornaments to express their inclinations for femininity. Local Islamic police, the Mutawa, will punish violators by pouring paint on their heads. Ali said individuals were still free to cross-dress inside their own homes.
On the flip side, though, a salon in the Argentine city of Cordoba published an ad last month seeking a hairstylist, with the caveat that men who were not gay should not apply. The owner told Universidad Radio, "I have nothing against heterosexuals, but women feel more comfortable if the person taking care of them is gay. I've had a lot of complaints in the past. Most male hairstylists are trying to pick up the women." Also in Argentina, in late November, about 10,000 people marched in Buenos Aires' 13th annual Pride Parade. The theme was All of Society for the Right to Diversity, Civil Unions for the Whole Country.
Argentina's first gay radio station also began broadcasting recently, available on the web at argentinagayradio.com. South Africa now has a weekly two-hour broadcast on Radio 2000 called The Tuesday Night Show and described as non-stereotype radio aimed primarily at the gay and lesbian community.
Longtime North American radio and Massachusetts TV personality David Brudnoy died last week at the age of 64. He publicly identified himself as a gay man in 1994. He also publicly disclosed at that time that he had AIDS, but it was complications of an unrelated cancer that ended his life. He wrote for numerous publications and described his struggle with HIV in his memoir, Life is Not a Rehearsal.
The creator of the popular fictional gay detective Dave Brandstetter, novelist and poet Joseph Hansen, died late last month at the age of 81 of heart and lung problems. Of his hero of a dozen novels, Hansen once said, "My joke was to take the true hard-boiled character in American fiction tradition and make him homosexual. He was going to be a nice man, a good man, and he was going to do his job well." Hansen himself was also openly gay, but had a rewarding marriage of more than 50 years to his late wife Jane, a lesbian, and they're survived by their son, trans man Daniel Hansen.
The founder of the U.S. National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association, Leroy Ahrens, died late last month at the age of 70 from complications of cancer. In his own career as a reporter, editor, and executive, he identified himself to co-workers as a gay man in 1978. But he only did so publicly in 1990 when speaking to the convention of the American Society of Newspaper Editors, as he expressed his pride in the group for having commissioned a survey of gays and lesbians working in news. The founding of NLGJA came a few months later, and Ahrens was its first president. The group's success in improving working conditions can be seen by the repeat in 2000 of that 1990 survey, with the number who were out in the newsroom up by more than half, and the number who considered their working environment a good one for them quadrupled. He's survived by his partner of 24 years, Joshua Bonet.
Scotland has said a final farewell to one of its early activists for lesbi-gay equality, Cecil Sinclair, who died in late October of heart and lung problems at the age of 73. A career civil servant, Sinclair joined the Scottish Minorities Group in 1971, when homosexual acts were still criminal offenses. SMG is now known as Outright Scotland. In 1974, Sinclair helped organize the group's Edinburgh Befrienders telephone helpline service, now known as the Lothian Gay and Lesbian Switchboard, and anonymously provided the money that made the purchase of its site possible. Sinclair also spoke about both groups on national radio and television.
And finally, do butch women really have no interest in fashion, or is it just that fashion has ignored them? A San Francisco-area lesbian couple is betting there's a market for clothes in masculine styles designed for female bodies among butch women, boys, and even transgender men. Designer Aisha Pugh and her partner Brianna Cole presented their new line last week at a show that had to turn more than 100 people away for lack of seating. Pew told the enthusiastic audience at the show that the point of it is bigger than clothes. It's about feeling good on the outside and representing who you are on the inside. Cole added, having a damn good pair of pants on can go a long way if you're having a bad day. Pew first ventured into clothing after Cole's infant niece joined their household and inspired her to design a jumpsuit with snap-on front panels that could easily be changed. She markets those so-called snapsies through her company Chocolate Baby Designs. The website, chocolatebabydesigns.com, now displays Pew's moderately priced collection of 20 pants and 18 shirts. The couple's line of butch women's clothes is appropriately named Studded.
That's News Wrap for the week ending December 18th, 2004. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Dean Elzinga.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
You'll meet the new openly gay chancellor of the Philadelphia Bar Association and hear about his rise to the top of the oldest such organization in the U.S. later in the program.
Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain, or for audio cassette subscription information, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA.
You don't have to be a mystery buff to love Mrs. Phipps, according to This Way Out's Janet Mason.
In reviewing Ann Seal's Packing Mrs. Phipps, a Joe Jacuzzo mystery from Allison Books, I must first admit to not being a reader of genre fiction. And since truths are being told, I further admit to being a bit sniffy, a term used at the Saints and Sinners LGBT Writing Conference in New Orleans, where I recently met Seal and was won over by her reading of Packing. Seal has a background as a performer and brought her considerable skills to bear on her reading at the conference. Even without her in-person lively oration, the book is energetic and does a good job at offering stand-up comedy in the guise of mystery. I found that I had a good deal to learn from it, both as a writer and a reader. As with all good mysteries, so I'm told, the writing is taut, spare, and suspenseful. It begins with a single expectant sentence, followed by a sense of place. If I had known Charity was going to die on me, I'd have eaten someplace else. Not that I had many choices in Parsee, Georgia. There is an old saying that life is what happens while you're planning on doing something else, and this is the track that the book takes. The protagonist, Joe, like the author, worked at a nursing home and then left to become the caretaker of the elderly Mrs. Phipps, hence Packing Mrs. Phipps. Joe was on her way to help Mrs. Phipps move when her Toyota pickup broke down. Prior to this mishap, Joe became wanted by the police, although at the end of the story, she is ultimately proven innocent. Thus, the stage is set for Joe meeting the beguiling Charity and driving her and her RV across the country to the Southwest. Unlike her protagonist, who is in her late 20s, the author Ann Seal is a mature woman with considerable life experience that she brings to bear on her writing. On nursing homes, where Anne recently retired from, she writes, "It wasn't that I was against nursing homes. They filled a need, and some people thrive there. As nursing homes go, Box Elder was one of the better ones. But when push came to shove, the people who lived there were at the mercy of their families, the staff, and the bottom line. One of the patients told me that after giving up her house and belongings and residing in a double room with a series of strangers for the rest of her life, she figured she'd be able to skip purgatory altogether." Another area where Seal brings her considerable expertise to the writing is in her experience of being an RV traveler. As the initially irritating but ultimately endearing Charity, there is, of course, a love story in the middle of everything, and her new friend Joe, short for Jodell, drive across the country, the author shows the reader the view of her world from the driver's seat of an RV. Along the road, the plot thickens with an international art theft ring, right-wing militiamen in the hills, a murder, and a battered woman who the protagonist helps to safety. All this leads the reader to a surprise ending, which, of course, I won't tell you since it is a mystery, and such a good one that even sniffy readers like myself will enjoy it. With commentary on lesbian literature, this is Janet Mason for This Way Out.
This is Michael Nava, the author of the Henry Rios Mysteries, but it's no mystery to what we're listening to. It's This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. My books reach a lot of people in the gay and lesbian community, but This Way Out reaches a lot more and deserves all our support.
Philadelphia's extension of spousal benefits to gay and lesbian city employees with registered life partnerships was unanimously upheld by the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court earlier this month. Their decision reversed the state appeals court's findings that the city had overstepped its authority by creating a new marital status. The Philadelphia legal world has indeed come a long way since the film that bears its name, and Andrew Churls hopes to continue that progress in the city of brotherly love. In January, Churls will take office as the first openly gay chancellor of the Philadelphia Bar Association, the oldest such group in the U.S. This Way Out correspondent Robert Drake chats with Churls about his cinematic inspiration, being an openly gay attorney, and his outlook on the future.
I want to talk a little bit about where you've come from before we get into where you're heading. One of the things that fascinated me about reading about you and about your history was your fascination with the film Inherit the Wind. And I was hoping that we can elaborate a little bit about how that affected you, not only personally, but also as a career.
Well, you know, Inherit the Wind is a great reconstruction of the trial of the century.
Mm-hmm.
I think it ranks ahead of the O.J. trial as in importance. And it particularly should, because it put onto a national and a world stage the entire issue of progress and technology versus the efforts of people to keep learning and education from triumphing and mm-hmm. from having an influence. And it was also great courtroom theatrics. It was actual real courtroom theatrics in the sense that there's very little of a difference between what's written in the trial transcript and the way Frederick March and Spencer Tracy battled it out. But I think I learned from that movie that a courtroom can be dramatic and a courtroom can be a great stage to argue great issues. Rules apply to how you argue, and there's a hope that the truth will out.
It's been almost 15 years since the time when you became the first openly gay member of the Philadelphia Human Rights Commission. And I guess what fascinates me is that people take things for granted these days. But that was an interesting time back in 1990, joining the Human Relations Commission. And I'm wondering what that was like for you getting involved with on a local level for human relations and how that helped your own personal career getting involved with that commission.
Well, it was interesting how much support I had from the firm, for one thing. It was also interesting to go to the Human Relations Commission and to be the first person advocating systematically in that forum on issues related to gay rights.
Mm-hmm.
I think the commission was receptive, but I think that there were always new issues, and they seemed strange to people at that time. In fact, we had a gay marriage and domestic partnership case that had been hanging around for 10 years when I got there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember feeling that I didn't want to push it because if we brought it to a vote, it might not win.
Right.
We're past that, at least on a local level, so that's good.
That obviously segues right into questions on a national level and getting your personal opinion about things like that's happened over the past year with the proposed constitutional amendments, the issues of marriage in both Massachusetts and, of course, the recent Supreme Court decisions. What's your take on that, and what's your personal viewpoint about what the road ahead might be happening?
Well, Robert, I think that, you know, as Chancellor of the Bar Association, I'm only allowed to mm-hmm. have an opinion that the Bar Association has taken. Now, we have been very much against the constitutional amendment that would limit the state's opportunities to decide who gets married. And the states have managed marriage and should be able to. My personal opinions, one, you'd have to ask my husband, really, how I feel about gay marriage. But if we did get into them, obviously, I have my relationship, which we call a marriage, mm-hmm. which is not an official legally sanctioned marriage. And the Bar Association in Philadelphia has really been on the cutting edge of teaching people about the law, of relationships that are not marriage. We have a committee on the legal rights of unmarried cohabitants, which is trying to sort of help lawyers systematize how they deal with the fact that people in New Jersey might have a civil union, and people in Vermont have something else, and people in Pennsylvania have common law marriages, how you harmonize that when people move from state to state, and how you can advance people's rights short of marriage since we don't have it.
Do you find that the fact that each state is sort of going about it on their own way, will that become confusing for states to handle other commitments?
Well, it's going to be an issue, though we've had 200 and some odd years of different laws relating to marriage in different states anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There are states where the law allows you to marry when you're under 18 and states that don't. There are states that allow cousins to marry and states that don't. So we've had a history of being able to work through what happens when people move from state to state and a history of having states recognize the acts of other states, and it hasn't been all that confusing. So when we have somebody from Massachusetts who's married, the law of the United States would have them stay married when they move to another state. And the Constitution probably requires that. We've got a lot of litigation to work through on things like that. It'll be interesting.
You had mentioned earlier, and I want to touch on it again, the Association's Committee on Legal Rights for Gay Men and Lesbians. And besides the marriage issue, what other issues was that committee tackling?
Well, that committee was formed in 1996 or 7. I was the first co-chair. We dealt with a number of things that were internal to the profession. We got the 25 largest firms in Philadelphia all to publicly state that they would not discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation. We were instrumental in getting the Philadelphia Bar Association through its insurance programs to make it possible for every person who works for a law firm or a legal employer to have domestic partners benefits, so that this whole profession, including its paralegals and its secretaries and administrators, could all get domestic partners benefits. We've lobbied through the Bar Association, passed resolutions about the right to marry, about the right to form domestic partners. So we've been instrumental, along with other committees, in trying to modernize family law and non-discrimination law.
The Bar Association here in Philadelphia is known as a progressive association, and it's very cutting edge in many ways. But I'm wanting to know if you've experienced any homophobia towards the fact that the first openly gay chancellor is going to now preside. Have you heard anything or felt anything?
Not a bit of it, Robert. I would say that there have been occasions where I've heard people have said, oh, we have a gay lawyer, that's a new thing, or a gay leader, and that's a new thing. People in the profession and elsewhere are still becoming aware of all the gays and lesbians and transgendered people who are around them. And so I guess by being a leader, I'm sort of coming out for what's in the profession, and it has surprised some people, though not all. But certainly I have not encountered anybody who's resisted my becoming part of the leadership.
I know, obviously, you are looking forward to your term as chancellor in 2005, and I wanted to talk a little bit about some of your priorities. Reaching out to immigrant and non-English-speaking communities is a big priority for you. Do you want to elaborate a little bit about that?
Yeah, Philadelphia is like a lot of American cities, in fact, like almost all of them. Its growth has come not from high birth rates or from internal migration from other parts of the country, but from getting the best, the brightest, and the most ambitious people from beyond our 50 states. And there is a lot that we as a legal community can do to promote people coming and to make them full citizens and participants in our civic life and our economy. So we're going to have a task force that the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania asked us to have on how to make interpreters more effective and more available in the courts. We are going to teach what we call People's Law School, which is a school for non-lawyers about everyday legal problems. We're going to teach People's Law School in Russian. We're going to teach People's Law School in Spanish. Our legal referral service for people who are otherwise not connected to lawyers will be available in Spanish, thanks to us and the Hispanic Bar Association. We have forms about how to use municipal court for landlord-tenant issues available in Spanish and Vietnamese, or they will be available shortly. We have efforts to make it more possible for foreign lawyers to practice in Pennsylvania so that we can increase our international contacts. So all of these ways will enable immigrants to integrate into the economy and into every other part of our city so that this is a good place for people to live and a good place for them to have opportunity for the for access to justice.
It sounds like a very heavy and full plate.
It's a lot to do, and one of the blessings of being chancellor is having the time that my firm gives me. They've basically given me the year off from practicing law, and the support of 13,000 lawyers who want us to do our part to make this city a better place.
That was Andrew Churls, the first openly gay chancellor of the Philadelphia Bar Association, in conversation with This Way Out correspondent Robert Drake. And now, here's a preview of two very special This Way Out programs to help us ring out the old and ring in the new.
How do you greet the day with sunshine in your eyes and a smile that seems to say, hey, it's okay.
From the courthouses in Massachusetts to the San Francisco City Hall, voices of our communities rang with joy and triumph in 2004. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. GLBT musicians joined that chorus and we'll feature our favorites on the Audiophile 2004 Year in Review coming the last week of December here on This Way Out.
Hello, I'm Steve Pride.
I was gratified by Richard's interest in seeing me in drag.
The issues that people during the Harlem Renaissance were dealing with.
For the record, it's not a self-diagnosed disorder.
I think a lot of times what happens with lesbian movies is there's been a trend to have them be a little bit more serious.
The first report that said that 1 in 10 men had had a significant homosexual relationship or encounter.
Join me for a special This Way Out when we look at Pride on Screen in 2004.
That's Audiophile Year in Review 2004 and Pride on Screen 2004, two very special editions of This Way Out, each coming soon to an audio channel near you. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Dean Elzinga, Graham Underhill, Rex Wachner, Janet Mason, and Robert Drake contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. This Way Out is primarily supported by tax-deductible charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. It's you, our listeners, who keep this program on the air and get some queer history, music, and culture on specially produced CDs as a bonus. For all the details, please do log on to thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Happy holidays, and thanks for listening on Access Radio, Wellington, New Zealand, WPKN, Bridgeport, Connecticut, KUBO, El Centro, California, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.